cocaine issues, and second, the Rafua issues. So Rafua, we haven't really gotten into it all. We still have some other cocaine things to talk about. So that'll be for this coming week, with the Rafua the following Sunday. In terms of today, I'd like to talk about the Tochein issues that are related to that which we spoke about. And then, if we have some time afterwards, so we also said on Thursday that, in terms of Chumash, that as much as we are limited to Rishon and Chumash, we like to get past the first Pasuk. And the Parshas Mishpatim was so jam-packed that we didn't even really get past the first Pasuk. Arguably, we didn't finish the first Pasuk. I mean, there's more one could say about the first Pasuk. Okay, so we can't go on forever but the first Pasuk, but wanted to try to get a little bit more into some of the other Pesukim, especially because if not now, when? Future years will be up to other Aliyahs. So if we have time today, following saying some points about Tochein, we'll try to go back a little bit to the Chumash, and then at 12:40, God willing, we'll daven Mincha. And then for the rest of the week, we have some major issues in Tochein still to finish. We need to talk about Tochein Acher Tochein from the Lamdish perspective, and we need to get into the widespread or wide-ranging issues that come out of Tochein in a mill, a windmill and a watermill, and how that affects not just Tochein, but a lot of other malachas. And also the issue of Rafua, which touches upon issues of how Gezeros operate. And again, like the windmill issue, has ramifications not only for the malacha of Tochein, but for many malachas. So we'll try to get involved in those discussions this week, and the ramifications for many areas of Hilchos Shabbos and beyond. Okay, so in terms of some of the halacha lemaaseh about what we spoke about, so again, we just brought up some issues during the week, so we don't want to leave you without any resolution about how they are observed the halacha. So first of all, one issue that we talked about is we saw that because Tosfos raises this issue about silka being the only thing subject to Tochein, and we tried to figure out what it is about silka that might make that the case. Is it because it's being cooked? Is it because it is necessary to have it cooked? Is it a certain type of vegetable? So the fact is, in terms of halacha lemaisa, as much as all of that's important to understanding the different nuances of the sugya, in terms of halacha lemaisa, you don't really find these distinctions in Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch just talks about a yarek and doesn't say anything about whether it's ne'achal chai or not. Shulchan Aruch, if you want to look it up. And by the way, it's Mars Mar Makomos. I was also thinking that I may put Mar Makomos that we'll refer to today. Some of the things that come up halacha lemaisa, it's kedai to look at afterwards. So I may put a list of Mar Makomos that are both for tomorrow's shiur and possibly for things to talk about today on tomorrow's list. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Chaf Aleph Yud Beis, so all that's written there is that somebody who cuts up a yerek very finely is risking Tochein. And the Mishnah Berurah says, the Mishnah Berurah over there notes, as does the Kaf HaChaim, that there's no indication that it makes a difference whether it's something that needs bishul or not. So with all the lumdus mekom munach, as far as halacha lemaisa, we find it broadly applied to apparently all yerakos, regardless of whether or not they need bishul. And we also did talk about the major issue of whether or not the heter of miyad extends to Tochein, if you recall from our discussion in Borer. So we saw that it wasn't 100% agreed upon whether Borer was something, whether miyad was an issue that was unique to Borer, or is it a broader heter? Is it something about derech achila, which could perhaps be extended to other malachos? We saw there was some discussion as to how many other malachos it could potentially be extended to, but the most likely candidate, the one that's most agreed upon if you extend it at all, was Tochein. That was where the Rashba and the Ran and the Ramah and many others agreed that Tochein also has a heter of altar. But not everybody agreed. The Shultiki Borum disagreed, and there is a little bit of a grumbling about it. So for the most part, there does seem to be such a heter. Many do assume that there is a heter of Miyad by Tochein, but sometimes it's kedai to throw in some other factors as well, because there is a little bit of a machlokus about it. The Mishnah Berurah raises this point that there are yesh mefakta question the hatter. Chazanish is not too thrilled about it. So since there is some discussion, so there are those who suggest throwing in other ways of modifying it as well, such as the Mishnah Berurah says one should cut bigger pieces than he normally would. So if somebody wants to make a salad, let's say on Shabbos, so then he should make a salad using bigger pieces than he would during the week. During the week he would cut them smaller. On Shabbos he should make them bigger in order not to have them be the tochen that he would do during the week. And Reb Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he does not seem to think this is necessary. He says, starts off saying maybe a Baal Nefesh should be machmir for this, but I'm not even sure a Baal Nefesh has to be machmir for this. Put it all together, he thinks that essentially the heter of Miyad really does apply, and he doesn't really understand what you accomplish so much by making bigger pieces. You don't want to be machmir, fine, okay, but doesn't really seem to think that that's essentially so necessary. There are other things you can do also, which we'll get to in a few minutes. I think Gil was up and then Danny.
In terms of the Mishnah verse that Yesh
Mefakpikin,
I saw in the Beit Yosef that the Anti says to be Yotel the Shito, you should do that as well. How
do I make cut bigger pieces?
Cut bigger pieces and eat it longer. So, how do we use that in terms of like Sock, because he didn't say it in the Shulchan Aruch. So, like, how does that work?
Right, so it seems like, and this you could definitely argue about having interpreted it, but it seems that in the Beis Yosef, his general approach is different than in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch is telling you what the real bottom line is. And the Beis Yosef, he's surveying all the Rishonim and dealing with them. So in his perspective of the Beis Yosef, he's saying the fact is there are other Rishonim, such as the Shulchan Gibarim, who have taken a different view about this, so it makes sense to take that into account. The bottom line of the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't. And later Svarim also don't until you get to the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish. And that's why Reb Moshe thinks that there is a very heavy literature that doesn't require it, and therefore he is not so gung-ho about having to do that. Some of the other points that we brought up, again, just to emphasize how they are included the Halacha, so we do assume, as we discussed, that Ein Tochein Ela B'Gidulei Karka, that tochen does have a limitation only to that which is grown from the ground, but that is only within the category of ochlin. It's an unusual type of application. I was discussing this a little bit with Michelle Mayer before, that this gedulei karka issue continues to be a little bit vexing, that the Gemara brings it up by some halachos and not by others, and then it's introduced sometimes by the Rishonim, sometimes by the Gemara, sometimes by the Rishonim, sometimes by the Achronim. So in a lot of the Siddur of the past, so we seem to have a Gedulei Karka requirement. It's not 100% clear when it's applied and how it's applied. And here it's applied, but in an unusual way, that if the Tochein is with Ochel, then the Ochel has to be Gedulei Karka. But we clearly see that there is Tochein by other things. Apparently there are different types of Tochein. So Tochein that's not involving Ochel does not have to be Gedulei Karka. But Tochein that is does limit itself to Gedulei Karka. But sometimes something could be not considered ochel. So for example, if you have a raw meat or raw fish, which is not edible, so then that could be subject to tochein because that is in its non-food form. It's only once it's cooked, then the Shulchan Aruch says that one can cut up meat and that's ready to eat. That's not subject to tochein. It's not Gedulei Karka. But if meat was not edible, if it was raw, then it's a non-food category, and this limitation of the Gedulei Karka only applies to Ochlin. Hi.
What about something that's, in theory, it's cooked and it's disgusting, but it's not kosher, like dog food?
It's cooked and it's disgusting, but it's not kosher.
Right, so it's in theory, it's roi
lachil. Why are you throwing in the disgusting part?
In general, I don't think people would eat. I don't know.
Well,
I
but what, what's the significance here for this purpose?
I'm saying because it's definitely not raw, but I don't think a human being would eat it, even though in theory I guess they could. It's just probably not flavored how we like it, but it's cooked meat.
Mm.
So I'm saying if you have like a little dog and you break off, breaking it into small pieces, so that would be a problem.
You're feeding him cooked meat.
Is it Oakland or no? Because it's like...
I think presumably that's called Oakland. That would be my guess. I think that sounds like that's Oakland. Okay, so that's another issue. And then, hi.
With Gedulei Karka.
Mm-hmm.
So the Truman Adeshin. So he's saying that meat, cooked meat is not gudule karpa,
right.
But things are, and then he says left eye is gudule karpa. So that goes against ein token achar token.
Right.
So, how does that,
so there also, that's the next point which makes, so we do assume also ein token achar token, halacha l'maisa, and the details that Sugya will get into tomorrow, all the lumdish implications. But in terms of our halacha l'maisa discussion, we do assume that ein token achar token. That also has this limitation, though. If you have something which reforms completely, so it's back to its toche, original untochen state, so then there could be tochen again. In other words, it's not about your resume that we check to see whether you've been tochen. It's that if it is a further level of processing, if it is one level of being tochen, and then you get you want to grind up again what has already been ground, so then there's no prohibition to do a second level. But if something was ground and then somehow completely reconstituted itself, so it's essentially indistinguishable from what it was beforehand, so then it's assumed that that is considered to be a first tochen, which we'll get into tomorrow. There is some similarity and some overlap between this principle and ein bishul achar bishul. So you could use that rule of thumb to compare here also, that even if we say that there's no violation of bishul to cook something that's already cooked, but that wouldn't be true, let's say we know we don't apply it to water, because water reverts completely to its previous state. So if something goes back to a state where you cannot any longer at all perceive the effect of malacha number one, so then it would be prohibited to do it again. Hi.
When it comes to bishul achar bishul, I thought it was an Indian of like malacha machshavah, because with Basra Bechala there would be bishul achar bishul, but specifically with Shabbos, that
bishul achar bishul is a big machlok, but Basra Bechala is a big machlok, because it's not 100% clear what the story is when it comes to Basra Bechala. There's different ways of understanding if there is a distinction. The Chuvas Chassam Sofer about it, it's a big literature, what exactly is the overlap or not overlap between Bas B'chalav and Shabbos. So I won't get into that so much, because it'll take us a little far afield. What I just want, and maybe tomorrow we'll get into it more, because we'll talk about Ein blank Achar blank, to what extent they are the same idea. What I just want to bring up now is in terms of imagining this point of connection, that just like, even if we say Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, but if the Bishul becomes completely undone, then there is bishul achar bishul. So too, ein tochen achar tochen, but if the tchina becomes completely undone, then there is a prohibition of tchina.
What would be an example of that, Joe?
An example let's say we have ground, if you have dirt that's being ground up, and then it comes back together again. Or you have something that was...
But it's always together, meaning even when it's ground, it's together. Not
together, yeah, but it's clumped. If it's reclumped.
So if you put water in it?
Or the weather makes it reclumped.
Then.
I know it's hard to picture exactly what falls into the category, but say you have. I have to think of some good examples.
Even though it was dirt, then if you would artificially add the water, then you may have an issue with washing or something.
Right, so you're not, that's assuming you're adding the water, but something happened to it that made it go back to its original state.
Okay.
I think we were ahead of first. Okay, sorry, Dad, yeah?
Gelatin could be an example of that, where it's ground.
Gels.
Yeah, meaning the way that it's made is it's ground up initially, I think, when they grind them up, and then they put them into food. So.
And then it gets reconstituted the way it originally was?
I don't know if it's exactly the way it originally was. We're saying only specifically the way it originally
was.
Yeah,
that would be a new level. Okay. It is interesting to note also that the way it seems to be presented in this farm, that even if we do assume a heter of miyad or heter of darach achila, that it has to be literally achila. While if you have some other use for something, even if that use is immediate, then we don't allow token for that purpose. So why should that be the case? It's just interesting logically. It's not really explained so much. But I think there are a few answers one could give to that question. Why should you say that if, when it comes to borer, we say there's a heter miyad, and we apply that even if it's not literally eating? Why should it be that if tochen has such a heter, it's only when it comes to eating? So I think there are a few answers one could give to that question. Anybody want to give it a try?
Well,
In other words, why should we apply this heter more restrictively by Tochen than by Borer? Sammy?
Well, I mean, if you're coming after the Rishonim, so then there's the subjective aspect in Borer.
Okay.
From Tosos. So therefore, once you have a subjective definition of what is the Tarovis that you could be Borer, mm-hmm. so then perhaps you can also have a subjective definition of what is considered Achila.
Okay, that's interesting because the word ochel could be subjective, so achila right. can be subjective. Okay, that's interesting. That's not along the lines I was thinking, but it's an interesting point. Anybody else want to take a stab at it? So I think one point to take into consideration is that derech achila is only one theory in the miyad of borer, and there's also the derech borer aspect. So when you're dealing with borer and you're using it miyad, so then you have the combination of the possibility that it's not derech borer and that it's maybe derech achila. The whole tzad to extend it to tochen is because you understand derech achila to be the operative heter, and maybe therefore we want it specifically to be actual achila. I think that's one component. And the related svar, maybe it's not so much a different svar, is that the idea of Derech Achila itself is a little bit controversial, even in the context of Tochen. So if we're going to allow it, we'd probably only allow the literal example of that situation and not necessarily consider it to be a broad exclusion in the Malacha. So really those are two different ways of saying probably the same svar, but essentially we don't really know there's any exemption of Miyad when it comes to Tochen. We only know that maybe the svar of Derech Achila could be extended to Tochen. So therefore, if we are going to extend it, so presumably it should be a very limited extension, and we're not necessarily ready to expand it as widely as we are in the context of Borer. It also comes up that the ways you would apply it to Borer usually are because you're assuming the whole issue of Borer goes beyond the Ochlin context, which itself, as we saw, is somewhat of a debate. So it's easier to say we could be makel in this area where we're not really sure the malacha should be. When it comes to tochen, it's not necessarily the case that the extension itself is as tenuous. That makes sense? So for example, to say borer is mutter by kalim, and we call derech achila usage, it's easier to say that because we're not 100% convinced it should be extended to kalim in the first place. But in the cases of tochen, where it's not necessarily about achila, so we haven't seen that tochen is limited only to achila, and therefore to say that the heter of derech achila should be extended when the heter itself is a machlokes, but the iser is more clear, it's a little bit harder to extend that. Okay, was there a question up there before? Yep.
Just in terms of Miyad, the reason why it's much more clear for is because it says explicitly in the Gemara that Miyad is, and by token it doesn't.
That's a big reason. That's certainly a very big fact. You know, that's a very big issue. The Gemara does say it by Borer, so that's undisputed, as long as you have the other two factors there. And when it comes to Tochen, it's a Machlokes Rishonim.
So Rishonim just extended, that's the first place we see it. What's the svar again for why they...
You said for extend Miyad you're talking about?
Extend Miyad from Borer to Tochen.
Right, so the extension of Miyad, the applicant, to say there's a heter of Miyad by Tochen, is a chiddush. Not all Rishonim agree. A lot of Rishonim agree.
What's the...
So the assumption seems to be that Miyad is a way of saying Derech Achila. So if you have a Malacha that's Derech Achila, Borer and maybe Tochen too, so then there's a heter. So by Borer we know there's a heter. And by Tochen, we're pretty sure there is. And when it comes to the sphere in which that would be applied, so let's say to apply it to non-achila by Borer, so what do we have? We have a definite miyad heter, and we have a shaky iser. And to apply it to a Tochen, not literally achila case, we have a more solid iser, and a little bit less obvious heter, so you can see why the math would come out a little bit different. Okay. So a major issue of the halacha, which is very controversial, it's important to be aware of. So what about dicing up food or mashing up food, let's say, the better way to put it, called risuk. So let's say somebody wants to mash up a banana. So here there is a major machlokas haposkim about this. And Chazon Ish was machmer about this. at least on the surface. Because the Chazon Ish understands that this is comparable to some things we find in Chazal, that certain substances, mashing it up, a risuk is considered to be tochen. And there are others who are makel. And the reason that they're makel is because they understand the substances where this is a prohibition is where you have internal parts that kind of break apart. So let's say you have a vegetable that's made up of different kinds of insides. It has an outside and it has little casings inside, has little shells inside. So when you mash it up, they all become disconnected from each other. Now they're loosely held together by their outer liquidy substance now, but they're now basically all broken apart.
Like oranges?
Oranges, not necessarily. What's the typical example?
Peas in a bottle?
Maybe. But you have things where there's different substances, identifiable different substances inside, which are now separated from each other. But if you take a banana and you mash it up, so it's all the same banana, it's just mushy.
So what about water? I mean ice.
What about ice? So ice might be much different. Ice, the Mishnah says not to do it. It's not clear whether that's a deraisa or a derabbanan. And that has to do with the fact that you are extracting water. It's a schita issue. Or it's a molad issue. The machlokes are showing what the issue was.
Did they understand that there was like water? Meaning, did they understand that ice was different from water? Did they think that it was like two different substances?
Yeah, but
like
the iser like by water is probably for not a tofen reason.
Right, but
well, why would it? It's all the same thing, so that this should also be a molad issue. Meaning, if
water,
ice is water,
right,
and then crushed ice becomes water, so then a different banana is a crushed banana, so then it should be the same thing.
No, there's a difference between mushy ice, if such a thing exists, and water. Water is actual liquid, right? Banana doesn't turn into banana juice. It turns into a mushy banana. So the mushy banana is the same thing as a banana. Well, water and ice are two completely different.
It's two different forms of the same
thing. Right. Yeah, they're completely different forms. One you can hold in a cup, and one... Right, juice. If you make banana juice, we're not talking about banana juice. We're talking about mushing it up.
Yeah, you juice. I think you can mush it up.
Okay, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about mushing it up so it's mushy. Gil?
When Chazon Ish is machmir, is that not miyad? Meaning if miyad is...
Yeah, so he doesn't. So he's also not so convinced as a het or miyad. Now, happens to be that there's another way to do it, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, that one could do it with a shinui, and one could take like the back of a spoon, or take some other kind of kli and drop it on it, pound it on it, and so that's, it's another area where there's a pretty easy workaround. But in terms of the miyad, or to say that this is not tochen, so the Chazon Ish wasn't ready to say that.
Why isn't it dush, if there's specific, like a particle, like whatever, the way it was described, that are separating from one another? Why?
Similar to dash, but dash, as we saw, one of the definitions of dash seems to be if there's an outer casing that's removed. Here, this is just broken up into its internal parts. So so there seems to be, there are many who assume Lakula based on this. And the interesting thing that's a little bit difficult is, and again, even the Chazon Ish, we'll see, there's a way to do it, but how would this extend to something like potatoes and making mashed potatoes? So, Parfenis has a tshuva here where he allows it. And he allows it even according to the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish acknowledges that if something is made softer by dishel, if you have, let's say, presumably you're not dealing with raw potatoes, potatoes were cooked a little bit first, so something that was cooked a little bit is already not subject to tochen, and I'll read you a little bit about what he says here. So here Rav Harfina says that we've already discussed das kama poskim demiuch eino b'chlal tchina, that mashing something up is not included in tchina. B'yach l'das ha-chazon ish she'varo sham said the sphere related to miuch hu b'chlal tchina, and even according to the Chazon Ish, who says that it is. So then he goes on to say, "Ayin b'shulchan aruch the davar shekvar nisrasek v'niduch me'er of Shabbos ve'edu mechoser al eschika ba'alma motel asos b'Shabbos." So something which is already kind of mashed up before Shabbos, kind of broken up before Shabbos, you're allowed to do. And then he goes on to say that this is extended also to something which is cooked. He says, V'ayim b'chazanish t'bishulo mafkiv malachas t'china. That the Chazanish agrees that cooking takes it out of the status of t'china. And he quotes further literature, the Chuvas Pasadecha, Levard v'davrish nishpasol kol tzarecho tulo shayach bo tochein klav. That's something that's already cooked fully, it's already not subject to tochein at all. Ki ha-bishol kfar hifrit chiburo ha-tibiyin. The bishol has already broken up its natural connectedness. U'meichas dibuk kal kazeh lav shma t'china. And mashing up something like this, which is connected so tenuously, that's not called t'china. Okay, so far so good, right? So it sounds like he's allowing you to mash up these potatoes. And he goes on to say, Al-kol panem b'davar shekvar nispashel v'nisrake chalidei ha-vishol shuv mutter l'macho l'rosko b'li shina. So what's his bottom line here? Right after this, he gives another reason to be mako. But what did he just say in terms of his conclusion? Pretty clearly, it's mutter, right? As long as it's cooked beforehand. He also has his conclusions in the first line. He puts all of his truths. He has the first line, the conclusion, then he explains why. So it's bold. And the bold part here is, in this maku psas leideh bishul, mutter lekuli alma. Right? That if it's already softened through the bishul, so then it's mutter according to everyone, af shlo lechol la'alter, even without la'alter, because it's not tochen. And here, this paragraph, he says the bottom line again. He says, I am tshuva sibris Moshe, but we say for shmir Shabbos kehilchasa. So the problem is, Rav Moshe doesn't exactly say it like that. And Rav Moshe is a little more machmir, or a lot more machmir. Because Rav Moshe really seems, for some reason, when it comes to the tikkuchei adama, when it comes to the potatoes, he really needs it to be mashed up before Shabbos. And that you're doing more, like maybe you have a child who wants it to be even more mashed. So to mash it further for a child, so he allows that. But he requires it to be actually chopped up before Shabbos. This is in Or Chaim Chelik Dalet, Simenayim Dalet, the tshuva we referred to in the past where he talks about a lot of the tshuvas about Hilchos Shabbos. There's a whole Kuntros HaMelachos here. Very conveniently keeping it to Ayin Dalet, the same daf we're on in Masechet Shabbos. And here it sounds like he's really a lot more machmir about this. And his last line is El Mahater b'tipuchei adama el shikvar merusak ete. Is a tino grotzi yoser l'spok. So it's really only if it's really already chopped up before Shabbos, then you could go further with it. But he's not so excited about seeing tipuchei adama in this category. Well, it's not 100% clear why not. So the truth is, again, here there is kind of an easier heter. First of all, if it's la'alter, so there should be a heter according to Rav Moshe, even according to others didn't sign on to la'alter. But also, again, you have the shinoi approach, that you can use the back of your fork or something like that, and you can break it up that way. So it's an interesting question. Maybe we'll get into this a little bit more, because we're running out of time today, but why exactly we allow tochein b'shinui when other malachas we normally don't. Other malachas, if you have a shinui, so we only allow it in our Torah, but we prohibit it midrabanan. So the Eglei Tal talks about this. Maybe could look a little bit at the Eglei Tal tomorrow. It's in tochein, lamed gimel, lamed dash gimel. We'll maybe get into that a little bit more, but the bottom line, Beis Yosef already raised this question a little bit, but Beis Yosef's a little bit mysterious. Beis Yosef notes that there is a general approach to allow tochein through a shinoi, such as using the back of a fork or the back of a spoon, something like that. And he compares it a little bit to Borer B'yad. The problem is that Borer B'yad doesn't seem to be based on shinoi, it seems to be based on other factors. So why there is a comparison there, that's something the latest farm bring up. So perhaps this question needs a little bit of a better answer, which maybe we could talk about. But in terms of halacha lemaisa, there is a approach that there is a widely accepted approach that, going back to the Rishonim and the Sefer Halacha Yom Hazeh, that we do allow tochein with a shinoi, even though by other malachas, for the most part, a shinoi usually means it's an issur d'rabban. Okay. Yes, sir.
That allowance of tochein with a shinoi is if it's la'altar or not la'altar.
So it's that there again also, so since it's not clear what it's based on, so then the later svarim say that presumably it should be la'altar. If it's being used la'altar and it's b'shinoi, and then we're makel. Right, thank you for pointing that out. So here's another interesting discussion that's relevant to a lot of malachas. So there are those who say that the things that you're allowed to cut up under the circumstances we've discussed so far, so you shouldn't use a utensil that's made for that purpose, which is an idea that goes back to the Rivash, and the concern is based on Uvda Dachal. If you have a utensil that's for that purpose, maybe it should be a problem of Uvda Dachal, and the truth is this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So this is brought in Shin Chaf Aleph Yud, and it's interesting that Moshe Feinstein doesn't think this is a problem, at least when it's extended to cheese or eggs, cheese graters or egg slicers. So that particular extension Moshe was asked about, and he writes a very interesting policy in terms of what Uvda Dachal is. He writes that Lefi Moshe Kasavti Leka Shum Isser, at least in those cases. It sounds like he's responding to the case of the egg slicer and the cheese grater. First of all, he says there is a rak chaticha l'chalakim v'lo dak dak. This just breaks it up into parts and doesn't grind it into a powder. When we tam uvda dachal lo muvan. This is a very interesting principle here. He says that the fact that the issue of uvda dachal, that is not understood to me. V'chimasha osin v'hakil hamalacha yischashev uvda dachal. But just because something becomes easier, we call it Uvda Dachal. In other words, he's saying that it would sound like, oh, because of Uvda Dachal concerns, we should increase your tircha on Shabbos, we should make you work harder. He doesn't think that's the issue. So it's the Gam b'Shabbos, yesh tzarech v'ratzel l'hakel. Uvda Dachal shekasev harivah, she'osa tchina daka, k'mo she'osa dachal, she'mudda b'malacha, basically, the idea is that if you have a tool which does the malacha in a way that you wouldn't normally be makbid on, but makes it done in a perfect fashion, the kind of way during the week maybe you'd be makbid on, so that's Uvda Dachal. But the fact that it gives you an easier time, that's not necessarily Uvda Dachal. And he goes on to explain a little bit further. Says Uvda Dachal Hu Kedekasavti Shamalacha Nases Al Yedei Zeh Tova Kimalacha Kavua Daosin Bachal V'Lo Nikar Inyan Asiyas Arai Shanases B'Lo Kpeidu Kolkach Al Hamalacha Shetayasu Yafir. That it's not about whether it's easier or harder for you to do. If you want to accomplish your goal and it makes it easier with this tool, so then that's not Uvda Dachal. Uvda Dachal is that it does such a perfect job, and you wouldn't necessarily be makbid on it for your usage. But it makes it look like you're doing a professional job as opposed to a job right for now, which you need for your lunch. So that's where you get into Uvda Dachal. But if it makes your life easier, so adarabah, we're not looking to give you more tircha on Shabbos, we're looking to give you less tircha on Shabbos, so therefore he doesn't think that should necessarily be an issue. All right, go.
So when it comes to using a kli to compare it to borer, borer has a specific isser if you use a kli, right?
Right.
So there it's a chumra, so here it would be a kula that there's no like specific isser to use a kli, it just might be something daradaga.
Yeah, that the kli that would be used would perhaps only be subject to the chal. We'll talk about it a little bit more. There is a little bit of a literature about that, and I want to get into it a little bit tomorrow, because the extent to which borer and tochein are comparable, the question that you're raising, there's a little bit of discussion I want to have about that tomorrow. It has to do a little bit with the Gedra of Malacha.
You make it more proper if it's more
correct. Right, so I want to get into that a little bit more tomorrow in terms of the Lamdas Shabbat. But in terms of Halacha L'maisa, so there is this Uvda Dachal concern that's raised. So his point is that Uvda Dachal is applicable only if it does a more perfect job that's not relevant to your temporary usage, rather than if it does an easier job, which is which is not our concern. We want to make your life easier on jobs. Okay. Yes, Donnie.
Just to go back to the mashing potatoes idea for a second. For the Chazon Ish says that you're not supposed to really be mashing potatoes. So is that any different than making a salad? Meaning both are tochin formats, just and they're also meat, so you would say that you're not allowed to cut up vegetables for salad either?
Well, except you could do it with bigger pieces. You know, that's what the Mishnah Berurah
brings. You can't mash with bigger pieces.
Well, mashing you could do with using the back of a fork or the back of a spoon. And with the salad, you cut bigger pieces. So everyone seems to acknowledge. Sorry?
What's together for bigger pieces?
Right, so that's subjective, and there's a whole literature about that also, about how there doesn't seem to be, Farfner has a few chuvas about trying to figure it out, but it's hard to really give jurim on this. But something that's bigger than you would do during the week, something that's recognizably bigger than what you would do during the week. So again, if one wants to be machmir, what Dan is pointing out, if one wants to feel that there is, let's say in the case of the mashing, first of all, an issue of tochin to begin with, and that there isn't a miyad hatter, so then in the case of mashing, what one would do would be the shinui, and in the case of cutting up for the salad and the like, one would do bigger pieces so that it doesn't have the appearance, or doesn't have the reality of the duck, or the definition of small pieces that some of the Rishonim have. Sorry?
Does one have to cut it up?
So that's where Moshe says he doesn't think you have to do that. But the Mishnah Berurah recommends it. Mishnah Berurah recommends it, and Moshe thinks that maybe a Baal Nefesh could, and then he's not even so convinced that the Baal Nefesh has to. So that's his answer to does one have to. I think Jonathan was up first.
So in light of the Rav Moshe Tshuva, so what are some real examples that involve the whole?
If you have to figure out what kind of tools he's talking about, but something that's purpose is not to make life easier for you, but its purpose is to make it in perfect shape so that the caterer can sell it in the store. You know, something that's there to make a more professional job and not to have the impression that it's just for your usage right now, but that it's there to be a part of how somebody who was selling this would do it.
So like a character grader maybe?
I don't know if that necessarily falls in that category. I don't know if he necessarily has to have an example. He's basically saying that he's not so convinced that this is something that has to be extended into this category. Hi.
Maybe a broader question, but when Moshe is saying Baal Nefesh.
Yeah, what does that mean? It's a good question. It is a broader question by definition, I guess, the broadness of Nefesh. He's saying that somebody who feels that he's very much covered all his other bases, he's satisfied all the real halachas, and now he's looking for an even higher level of conformity with every possible opinion, so then that's something he might want to shoot for. But then he's not even convinced in this case that it's even in that category. Hi.
So if someone holds like the Chazon Ish from B'nai Brak or whatnot, and he goes to someone's house in Yerushalayim and doesn't hold like it, and the guy cuts up salad, like Rav Moshe says, is there any issue for the person to eat it? If you were out for not to eat it?
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason for him not to eat it. Shechter often points out in this context and related context that, first of all, we're not clear what the knossos applied to, but that in general, anything that there is any valid shita for, that if somebody does it, so it's not shayach to asur to the other. That presumably is true even if the person who's doing it doesn't have a legitimate right to be following that shita because, let's say, he has other poskim. But certainly if he does have the right to be following that shita because his poskim have told him this. So as Rav Shechter has expressed many times, but it doesn't make sense to say that Bavaji Yosef could do this lechachila and you can't even benefit from it b'diavad. There's no... Yeah, presumably. And I would certainly argue that in that context, it's very nice for you to be a Baal Nefesh, but if you're going to make a big fuss during lunch and it's going to be clear, then that is at least Yura. But in addition to being Yura, it's going to cause a lot of machlokas and lack of shalom bias, and that's not anybody's definition of what a Baal Nefesh is going to do. So I certainly wouldn't recommend that, but that's the general klal, is certainly if somebody else is doing something that there is a shita that allows, then you are not prohibited to benefit from it afterwards. I think Jonathan was up first.
But if you say that's like from your Pesach that it's something completely usher, then how would you allow it? Like, how could an Ashkenaz go to a Sephardi's house on Pesach and eat kidneys?
This is in general, though. First of all, kidneys is a minig anyway.
Right.
But we're not saying that you should eat a substance you're not supposed to eat. We're talking about a knas, that if a malacha, if an action was done and doesn't affect the substance right now, it's that maybe we should penalize the action by saying you can't benefit from it. So that only applies to something that no hetter for at all. But if there is a hetter to do it, which you happen not to hold from, so then there's no isser after the fact for you to benefit from.
Would this apply also to ask them actively to do it?
That's an interesting discussion as well. There are some Rishonim who sound like that, that's the case. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva which sounds like that also, and it could be that if somebody is all ritva, it's a little bit of a longer discussion which gets involved with some with the Ibra discussion, which is also a shtickle Shabbos issue. So maybe we'll find a time to get into that in a little more detail. There are both studs to that question. There are those who, if it comes up in a lot of context, and there are those who allow that, and there are those who feel differently. It's a broader discussion that draws on a lot of parameters of the Ibra. You said 11:40 was mincha. Is that 12:43? You said 12:40 was mincha.
12:43.
That's what my wife texted me. Okay. So all right. So a few more minutes. I did want to get a little bit into chumash, but one other point to mention, a somewhat lesser known point about toche, also draws on some lumdish things that we have talked about in other contexts in the past. If you look up in the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Shin Beis. This is much earlier than the section we've been dealing with. Shin Beis, 302. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about somebody who has a little bit of, let's say, like a little bit of cement, tit, on his clothing. So he's been working in Mitzrayim, and he got some on his clothes, so he wants to take it off. So the Shulchan Aruch says that he can use his fingernails to flick it off. And then he quotes an opinion that that's true only if it's wet. But if it's dry, so now what are you going to do? You're going to make it crumble by knocking it off with your fingernail. So then there are those who ask for that, mishum toche. You're basically making this hardened substance crumble. So the Magen Avraham notes that this really would seem to be at most an Issa D'Rabbanan, because it is a malacha shenitzricha l'gufa. You have no real interest in being toching the substance. You're interested in taking it off of your clothes. And Rav Nassim Gishtetner has a discussion about this. We've quoted him many times from his tshuvas and from his Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos. This is the first time that we're quoting him from his Sefer on Hilchos Matilas Yadayim. His Nas Imperio and Helchos Netilas Yadayim, so he raises the question that he doesn't answer, is that he thinks this should be less than a malacha shenitzricha l'gufa. He thinks this should really be in the category of Tosfos Zomer Vetzarech Le'etzim, that we should argue that if you're not interested in the Davar HaNitchan, that presumably it makes sense to say that just like Tosfos raises by Dash, that the definition of Tochein should be not simply on a malacha and I'm a Lachas HaMishkan model, but on a basic definitional model, that if you're not interested in the substance that you are grinding up, you're just trying to get rid of it, so then it would seem like that's not tochen at all. It's even less than a Malachas HaMishkan Lagufa. So he would think that one should make the case that it's not really us at all, and that needs a further examination of why that should be something of concern. Hi.
Be because it's not exactly, meaning it's not that there's no tikkun, because we see that sometimes you would need to be toting dirt for kisui adam.
So which is itself a discussion, as we saw.
Whether you would be, or that was chovish though.
Right.
Right, would that be applicable by toting?
But even if you say you have to be totally in dirt, so then how does that explain anything here? So if you
I'm saying, so maybe you would think by zomer mitzar kleitzim, right? So therefore, you're already doing an action, and therefore mitzad the other malacha, it has nothing to do with it. There's no tikkun in that malacha at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're zomer, you're doing zomer. If you need the eitzim, so now you sort of created that second malacha aspect. But beforehand, then
you're drawing on like the marsha, right? You said that the trees are not fruit unless you make them into fruit.
Correct.
So here there is a concept of token.
There is a concept of token already.
Okay, maybe. Maybe, but when he talks about Dash and Tosfos and Gimel Mebeis, for those of you who joined us this semester, last semester we spent some time talking about the Tosfos and Gimel Mebeis, which says that there are different levels. Sorry if I'm explaining this before. It says there basically are different levels of malacha, that you can have a malacha that you do for its purpose, that's where you're chayav normally. Then you have a malacha shein tzricha legufa, where you do the malacha for an ulterior purpose, let's say. So that we paskin is a drabbanan, and the view of Rabbi Yehuda is that was a iser daraisa. So the question is, Tosfos asserted that there are some actions that are so far from their purpose that they are not even, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a malacha. And he gives the example of dash, that if you extract one substance from another, and you have no interest in the substance is going to go to waste. So then Tosfos asserts that would be an example of something which is not a malacha shein etzricha legufa, that's not even a malacha, that doesn't even count. So here, Yishtetner is saying similarly, that it seems like that klal should be applied to tochein also. But if you have a situation where you're grinding up something, but you're not grinding it up because you have any use of that substance in its ground form or in any form at all, you just want it to be somewhere else, so then maybe that's at most a malacha shein etzricha legufa, certainly at most a nisa d'rabbanan, but maybe it should be even less than a nisa d'rabbanan, maybe that shouldn't even be defined as tochein in any sense of the word, and maybe we should have been making one.
How do we know which malachas to apply that to?
So some malachas, it's a good question, which when we saw, we talked about that toast, we talked about some possible expansions. Tosfos says it in the context of dash. It's like, logically speaking, it sounds like this is something which is about preparing the substance for your usage. And if a malacha has that nature to it, and you're not even going to keep the substance, it's going to disappear right away, or it's going to go away from you, so then it makes sense that that's not within even the category of a malacha. Now clearly it's not the only way to see it, because Shulchan Aruch and others don't seem to bring that concern up. It's an objection one could theoretically raise.
You argue that it's also a case of being tochein after tochein?
I was thinking that also, that you might think that here this is already reconstituted, so to speak, in a new form of tartan. I don't know if that's going back
to
the original.
Dirt.
Yeah.
If it's dirt that is small enough to get onto your shirt, then probably it's ground up. It's not
right, so I wonder if you could say that that's considered going back to its original state, or if not, then that's probably another reason why this is a Chumra Ba'alman. Again, it's a day in the Shulchan Aruch rather than the only day in the Shulchan Aruch, and why it's likely at most of the Rabbana.
Maisa,
it's a Kedai to be Choshish to it, because it is brought in the Shulchan Aruch and the Magen Avraham. But it doesn't seem, presumably you could also find some kind of a shino you can do if you do it with the other hand, maybe. And that would probably also help if you're dealing with a malach shein tzricha legufa that's questionable to begin with. Okay, so that leaves us with 9 minutes to try to get a little further in the first aliyah of the Shvatim. So there are so many ideas just in this first aliyah that we should really touch upon on some level. So what we'll do is maybe we'll... so many issues of avadim that are important to talk about, which we're not going to be able to get in, but I'll just say a few points. One is that it's just interesting. I mentioned the Oznayim Mutarim has an important observation that it is striking, and many comment on this, the fact that the first thing the Torah talks about when it tells us about how to treat each other is it goes right into Hilchos Avadim. And one could have made the case that this is the last thing we need, right? So we just came from Shibud. We just came from the experience of being slaves. So we could hope that this is the last thing we need to be told about, that we know that slaves deserve good treatment, and slaves need good treatment, and we're not going to be careless with our avadim, so to speak, in a situation where that would ever come up. So that's a reflection of human nature, which, as Nayan Latara points out, it's a very real fact that it's very, very easy for a person who's gone through suffering to very quickly forget that when he's in a different position, when he's in a position of power. So it's very easy to turn off that memory. And the fact that the Torah consistently emphasizes that v'ahavtem asager, etc., and remember kigerim hayisim b'mitzrayim, so one should not take that as a reflection of the idea that it's automatic that you're going to do so. But it doesn't seem to be the assumption that somebody who lived life as a slave or as a stranger will necessarily automatically remember what it's like to be a stranger or to be a slave. But the fact that the Torah has to constantly remind us is, yes, it's true that we have that history to draw upon, but human nature is to forget it. And human nature is to forget it very quickly. And therefore, Davka, the Torah starts off with that, Parshas Mishpatim, as a way to counteract that. And there is such a thing, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, my brother and I, when we were kids, we used to note this and call this EKY syndrome. It stands for Eved Ki Yimloch, the Pasuk says, that when you have somebody who all of a sudden becomes powerful, so even if they're not very powerful, they don't have to be the President of the United States, they don't have to be somebody who is in charge of a lot, but just a little bit of power very often can transform somebody's personality in a way that is very negative. And this shift from slavery to freedom has a tremendous sakana to it, and therefore the Torah right away has to start off with that point. There was a famous experiment that was done by a psychologist named Zimbardo, remembering correctly, Philip Zimbardo, the Stanford prison experiment, where he had some students who were arbitrarily chosen. Some were chosen to be prisoners and some were chosen to be guards, and the guards immediately became, very, very quickly, became shockingly vicious towards the inmates, even though there was no real differential between them. And he had to cut the experiment short very early on because it had just gotten so way out of control. And it's a scary kind of thing. The idea a person has a little bit of power over somebody else, so then that becomes dangerous. And therefore the Torah right away, the first thing it starts talking about in Parshas Mishpatim is it talks about that. And it's also very striking, no pun intended, if somebody hits his eved, so if he breaks a tooth or an eye, so the eved goes free. And it's interesting also, Rashi tells us in the beginning of the Parsha that that's not true by an eved ivri, it's only true by an eved kanani. So it's an interesting question why that is. So some explain that by an eved kanani, a person is likely to be a little more aggressive, that there's so many protections that are there by an eved ivri, so that it's less likely that there's a need to put this kind of safeguard on. But essentially, this is a knas, that if somebody is causing a bodily wound, so that it shows that they're really too aggressive, it shows that they really don't have the right to be managing people, so to speak. And therefore, with an eved ivri, it's a little bit less of a danger, but with an eved kanani, there's a real risk somebody is not going to be in control, and if a person does this, that's essentially a knas, which is also interesting because this is kind of another backdoor entry. So one of the topics that comes up later in Parshas Mishpatim, one of the major issues is the question of the gedra of Nezikin, that Avos Nezikin are taught in Parshas Mishpatim, but it doesn't say explicitly what the Isser of Nezikin is. Is there an Isser to damage somebody's property? And what exactly is the relationship between the Chi of Nezikin and any assumed Isser Nezikin? As many do assume, as almost everyone assumes, that Lamaisa, it's presumably prohibited to damage somebody's property, even if you're going to pay for it afterwards. But the Torah doesn't spell that out in our Parsha. The Torah spells out that if you do damage somebody's property, you have to pay. So it's a whole discussion what the nature of that relationship is, and it's a little bit outside of Rishon, so it's outside our jurisdiction if we can't even finish Rishon, but we can slip it in through this point that the Chassam Sofer understood that this is basically a siyag along the same lines, that we want to create a safe environment, and not just because of Nezikin, but really also because of threat to life. If people allow themselves to have the Ovnos Nezikin out in the open, so they're not only going to pose damage to property, they're going to pose damages, they're going to pose a risk to human life. So in order to prevent that from happening, so the Torah puts all of these chiyuvei nezikin in place, so that one's not going to want to end up paying off bills all the time because his shor or his bor damaged people's property. So therefore, that's a way to keep everybody living safer lives. And so too, one could find a similar concept here. Hi.
What's an afkamina if is malchut? Like if there is an issur.
Well, let's say somebody wants. Let's say I want to come to your windshield with my sledgehammer and my checkbook. And I say, okay, I'm ready to smash in your windshield, but I'm writing out the check before I even do it. Here it is. Here, I'll pay for the finest service, labor, everything I'm going to pay for. Is that mutter to do? Some write exactly that. Some say it's an issue of v'haftarecha kamocha, although that's not necessarily the answer to the question. Maybe a person's happy that people do that themselves for the insurance money, right? Obviously, that's not proper, but you know, it's not necessarily a riot that somebody wouldn't want that. Although, presumably it is. Presumably it is v'haftarecha kamocha. And that is what some do invoke. But it's a whole discussion. There's a whole literature about this, because the Torah is not explicit as saying there's an isser. The Torah is explicit as saying that there's a chiyuv to pay. It doesn't say explicitly what the isser is. So that's a similar concept here, that maybe these knossos are a way of keeping people in check, keeping people from coming anywhere near the part where they would have to pay the knoss, where they'd have to pay the chiyuv to make them lead safer lives. So just one major issue, we have about 1 minute left, but one thing we should for sure be aware of is the Aliyah ends with the famous phrase, Virapo Yirape. And the Gemara has the expression over there, the Gemara in Bava Kamma, that Mikan Shiesh Rishus Lerofe Lerapos, that we see from this pasuk that there is permission for the doctor to heal, which is a major discussion. It's assumed to be more than that. And the Rambam quotes from other Makoros, not from here, that there's not just permission, that there's a chiyuv, that it's basically a mitzvah to heal somebody who is capable of healing. The question is, how do we justify a doctor charging? It's a mitzvah, it's a whole literature about that, and Schar Batala. It's assumed that not only is there permission to heal, but there's a mitzvah to heal. So the mitzvah is probably derived from other places. But here, Virapo Yirape is quoted as the source for the heter to heal. So why do you need a heter? So that's a whole discussion, why you need a heter. And there are basically two strands, there's two schools of thought as to why one might think that there's an isser involved and why we need a heter to tell us that it's mutter. So Tosus raises the issue in Bava Kamma that you might have thought that there's a distinction to be made from a natural illness, somebody gets sick b'day shamayim, to an injury that somebody else inflicts upon them. Something happens externally, or something happens from other causes, maybe, okay, that for sure, Torah says, heal him if you wound somebody. But if somebody gets sick, maybe I would have thought that there's no heter. Why not? So as Tosfos and others explain, is that maybe I would have had the mentality that who might interfere with God's plan? If God decides somebody should be sick, so what right do I have to heal somebody? And Kamashmalan, that's not true. That just like we have by Tztaka, just like we have by everything else, by Yolav Chesed, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets up his world in such a way that he gives people certain problems but still asks us to help with them. And it's not right for a person to say, well, if he's sick, it must be God's plan, he should be sick, and I'm not going to get involved. There's a famous discussion in Chazal where somebody challenged one of the Amoraim and said, how could it be that you should be engaged in chesed and the like? Isn't that a contradiction to God's will? Then what would you say that if the king, well, let's say the king would lock one of his subjects in jail and say, this guy committed a crime, nobody should feed him. I'm locking him in jail to keep him away from being fed. And you would sneak food into this guy. So wouldn't you say that that's going against the will of the king? So the response he got was, I'll give you a better muscle. Your muscle's off. Let's say if the king would be forced to put his son in jail for whatever reason. His son, he had some reason, his son did something, the king's got to put him in jail. So the king's not going to give him any food. But somebody else is going to sneak food to him. So wouldn't the king be grateful to that person? Or wouldn't he be happy that this person is doing this? And even though for whatever reason he can't do it himself, really he loves his son and he wants his son to be fed. So somehow that's a mashal for how Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to his creatures in this particular case. But the bottom line is, the Gemara tells us, the way the Rishonim understand, that it's not right to say, why should I interfere? Mekanshiyesh v'shos l'rofa l'rapos, that that's not a proper hashgafic stance to take. Then there's a whole other issue, which is in a different area of halacha and hashgafa that the Rishonim discussed. It's also interesting because Ibn Ezra has a chiluk which nobody follows today, especially there's not a zeh, I don't think anybody followed ever. that he says that maybe the heter is only for things on the outside, but if somebody has something wrong on the inside, so then there's no heter lerapos. So nowadays, there's a lot of reason not to follow that, but I don't think anyone ever followed that. But it seems to probably connect to the second issue, that the second issue is not so much hashkafic as halachic. That you might say that what right do I have to, let's say a surgeon's going to cut somebody open? All kinds of things a person could do, first of all, are themselves actions of chavala, and in addition, take on great risk. So there's a great chance that a doctor, by getting involved, might kill somebody. So what right does he have to violate somebody's person in that way, just because he thinks he's going to be able to cure him, especially because it's never guaranteed he'll be able to cure him. So we see that, if somebody's not qualified, and there are other people who are qualified, so taki is not allowed to. And we have different realms of halacha in terms of the chiyuv that comes out from that, which if we had more time, we'd go into a little more detail. But the basic thrust here, as the Yisfarim explained, is that if somebody is qualified and somebody has gone through the training and he knows what he's doing, so then he shouldn't say, okay, so mali lutzara hazos, why should I get involved in cutting open a person? Why should I get involved in taking on this risk? Maybe I'll make things worse. So yes, the Chiddush HaTorah here is that that's a reasonable risk. It's reasonable for a person who's qualified and who's trained and who knows what he's doing to get involved with the risk of making things worse and the initial violation of the Chavala or whatever else might be involved, if that is, in terms of the natural Darach HaTeva, something that has a chance of leading to a refuah. So that's an important hashgafic and halachic point, two different angles on why it is that the Gemara needs to understand that there is a heter of refuah. Maybe you would have thought there's an iser, so that's what's involved, and that's something that affects the process that then leads to not only the heter but also the mitzvah, which has its own discussion. I'll just end off on one point that Rav Zalman Sorotzkin also made, as many fascinating points in his Sefer Znayim LaTorah. It's also very relevant if you ever deal with patients and with people who are suffering from all kinds of situations and interactions with doctors, which are sometimes not so smooth. So he notes that there's reshus for the rofei lerapos, the doctor has permission to heal. He doesn't have permission to say there's no hope, that the refuah is in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to decide whether there's a refuah or not. The doctor's job is not to take away the hope. The doctor's job is to do what he can do. So, if he can't do anything, then there's nothing he's going to do. But it's not his job to paskin on the person if the person doesn't have any refuah, which is a very insightful point as well. Okay, so we are a little bit over time, but we'll dive in now. And